Okay, I think we are ready, and I will turn this over to Terry Robinson, who will be directing your questions to the six of us.
Matt, you are far and away the winner of the question
What a shot.
Let's start with one that will kind of capture a few of them. Have you completed the study of both the cost of mothballing for future use and or demolition? And if so, what are the results?
We have done our stuff, and at the appropriate time, we'll come out as a public part of the public process, working with people to go over all that.
This next question is either to Rocco or Doug. Can the market absorb this much space? Rocco.
Yes. We're just completing the Lafayette Hotel. We're opening it May 1st. It's 300,000 square feet. Every inch of commercial space has been rented. We have pre-lease with $1,000 deposits, 85 leased apartments. Before we open, we will have every apartment leased. And we're close to having that building completely leased before we start. So yes, there is a market, but you have to be creative. And you have to give people something different, not something that's institutional.
Doug, what is the potential for reuse? You didn't say.
The potential for reuse?
Is there a potential for reuse?
Sure.
I'm just reading the question.
But no, the type of use, or
I mean, do you see any practical potential for reuse in your estimation? You're familiar with the structure. You've been there. You're familiar with the reconstruction and that type.
Well, one of the big challenges is the mass of the building, and it's got a lot of interior space that's difficult to lease with the usual commercial or residential tenants. There are solutions to that about carving out sections in the middle that are exploring, that are part of the options that we've been looking at as the process that we've been in with the BNMC to look at that. To create light wells. When you're too far away from windows, people really don't want to be in those spaces. And it also creates a tremendous loss factor with the kind of common space and circulation space that you need to get to the spaces that are habitable. And as a developer, you don't want a big loss factor in the buildings because that's a waste of mental space. There's ways to mitigate that.
I'm sorry. It's a question of whether what the economics are, and if you can solve the economic challenges of the reuse, then absolutely you can develop it. You can fix anything. It's a question of what the costs are, and right now I don't think that we have enough information to really know what the true costs are, and what the and that varies depending upon what the end use is going to be. And being able to identify that market and know that to be able to get an investor to do that there's going to be a certain expectation that the market is there and committed in advance of any kind of significant investment. But there are incentives out there, whether they're enough to make the difference on making that financially viable, that remains to be seen as part of this sort of ongoing process that's only been going for a very short period of time so far.
Matt, I'm going to combine a couple here, and it says, there's a little commentary here, agreeing to close door meetings on a regional historic asset was a mistake. Why not take the approach of Gates or Richardson and hire ULI and do a real in-the-light process on reuse? And then I have another one that's kind of similar, but it's who were the groups that you contacted? The Industrial Heritage Committee has been active in Buffalo for 22 years. We are interested in documenting and preserving Buffalo's significant industrial heritage. I've left several messages on your voicemail. And we would like to be included in your discussion. So if you could touch generally.
So who is that person?
Here.
I'm sorry, I do owe you a phone call. I know you talked to, I think, Mike in our office. But I just looked at the message again. I've been traveling a bit. You are absolutely welcome to come to the table and be a part of those. Sorry for not getting right back to you. What were the other questions?
Well, it's pretty much which...
Oh, so the thing about why you know, an open ULI process. So again, what we've said in this, when we went to the Preservation Board 2 years ago, one of the things we've said to people is, you know, yeah, I looking back on this, after I had my conversation with a local preservationist saying, you should have met with people 2 years ago. And I said, well, I don't know a lot about preservation. I don't know much about this stuff. And that's when we agreed to engage in the process. Should we have done it 2 years ago? Absolutely, we should have done it 2 years ago. One of the things that was brought up, so we'll openly sit here and say, I wish we had engaged in the process. But once it was brought to our attention of saying, let's try to do this differently, that's when we opened the door and said, okay, let's engage differently. So there were five different groups there, at least five different groups represented at the table from the preservation community. You know, again, I don't know the preservation community that well. It was represented by people in this room saying, here's the groups you should meet with. Open the door, just like you're asking me to be at the table. We're open to having that conversation. So.
Which groups?
Oh, which groups? We had preservation, I'm going to get your names wrong, so don't take it the wrong way. Preservation, Young Preservations, Preservation Buffalo Niagara, Campaign for Greater Buffalo, Allentown Association, at least those four. There were probably others at the table. I can't remember all of them, but those four definitely were sitting at the table.
For our representative from the Preservation Board, will the Preservation Board...
Actually, I'd like to just add to that, that when Matt came into this, and I've given him a hard time about it, he kind of came into this kicking and screaming. With a little bit of the blinders on, that is, you know, a little bit of blinders on. But I saw very quickly those blinders come off and open up and realize that, you know, he was not only learning something, he was getting some good ideas, and he was also realizing that this is an important part. So the learning process was happening. The education process that we were trying to do with this group was happening with BNMC. And he was, you know, going against some of the advice that he was getting from his superiors, and because he felt that it was important to do this. So I just want to sort of... He did learn the process, had a long ways to go. It wasn't perfect, but it did get us there. And we also had a lot of people on that group that you find in a ULI type of study. I mean, ULI is a SWAT team of development, design, and planning professionals that comes into a community for a week. They study something intensively, and then they leave. And what they leave behind with them is a lot of great ideas, a lot of sort of ballpark figures, but it's not really the kind of a reuse study that has in-depth, tangible data that a developer can then take and do something with. It's really the first step to get the conversation and the community going and sort of thinking differently, thinking out of the box. And I kind of think we had a lot of that talent around the table that was able to do that, and that's the process that we were in the middle of. So, yeah, I think it was a protracted, and was it a perfect system? Absolutely not. But was it a valiant attempt to try to get something into a positive place? I think absolutely. And everybody around that table had one thing in common, and that was to do the best thing for this community. And it says, we're all just coming at it with different perspectives, trying to find a common ground.
You know, I just would like to add, it was mentioned that Preservation Buffalo Niagara was at that table, and we were. But unlike others, Preservation Buffalo Niagara actually does know a lot about historic preservation. And what we were attempting to do, and we would like to continue to do, in the process is to offer the information that we do have. We are an organization that has a professional staff in historic preservation. We also have access to state and federal agencies that provide that kind of information, and we consult with them. So we really would like to continue to be part of that process as long as there's an understanding that what we will be presenting is historic preservation advice. That's what is our role in any other part of the community as well.
The biggest organization that wasn't present was the Preservation Board. We are the regulatory, we are a certified local government in the state of New York.
Can I just follow up on that with just a minute? How is the Preservation Board engaged in this process, and how will they be engaged in this process going forward?
Well, we had a meeting, what about 3 hours ago, public hearing, where we voted unanimously to recommend to the Common Council that TRICO number one would be locally landmarked. And the reason we wanted it locally landmarked, so the discussions on the building come at the local level. As everyone knows, it's on the National Register of Historic Places, which means that it has certain protection if state or federal money are used. But all those discussions happen in Albany by the SHPO. We want to make sure that those discussions happen here in Buffalo, but in an extremely open way. I mean, all our meetings are every 2 weeks in 901 in City Hall, and I think that was one of the biggest. We did not know about this discussion happening.
Now, is your recommendation to the council binding, or is there further process?
It's not binding, it's a recommendation. That's why they call it a recommendation.
You wanted the one thing on ULI. I think it's important. I spent the Monday and Tuesday in Washington at the ULI going to this conference they invited us to. And I went over a lot of this with a bunch of different developers, again, around the country. And we're saying, anybody who wants to come in, take a look at this, you know, take a look at it. But the ULI aspect of it, I think I got to echo what Doug said. You know, we have a lot of good talent in this community, and what the group assembled around the table, I thought, represented better than actually what you'd get from a ULI panel, because they know this area.
Matt, based on your last comments, what is the current plan for TRICO by the BNMC? Will the demolition permit be withdrawn? And then a similar question, can we understand then that there is no schedule for demolition?
No, I think what I said earlier is we want to engage the process that we had already done. You know, we keep saying a public process. You know, we're going to go through the formal public process that Tom talked about. But more importantly, I think we've had a very constructive dialogue with the various preservation groups. I know we're going to add your group to the table. But I think that's a really good process for us to continue on.
So I need to understand that there is a demolition schedule for it, if there not.
Okay, we're doing it tomorrow. No, what I'm saying is we're going to get that group back together, and where we're going with this is it's a collective discussion with people, and that's what we're going to do.
I guess I'd be asked and answered regardless of what that was. Following up real quick, who is the demo contractor, and where are the funds coming from? Is it public money?
Again, we have that all set up. It's all on our end. We'll have that taken care of, and as we go through the public process, that will all come out.
So that's...
It'll all be taken care of. It'll be private money to take care of it.
I'm going to read one comment here while I regroup here, because we got a couple of comments. One is, start with retail on first floor and residential on second floor, then develop residential one floor at a time as desired. Part of the significance of the TRICO building is the way it expanded over time based on demand. Oshai worked with and around an existing brewery building. This is possible again with the medical campus working with and benefiting from reusing TRICO. Matt, environmental investigation studies. What was the scope of previous remediation?
It's in a document that I shared with it. I don't know that technical stuff to that. Someone in our office handles all that.
Has a detailed engineering study and redevelopment cost estimate been completed?
What's the question?
Have there been, I know that you shared a good deal of information with us, and I'm sure, I know the answer to this.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it.
Has there been a detailed engineering study and or redevelopment cost estimates been completed?
Yeah, I mean, through our process, we, you know, shared all the structural, and I think I'm answering your question, all the structural studies that we had. And then when it came to the estimates, just working through our group here, you know, it's a significant amount. I think it's going to be anywhere between, you know, we've really had between $200 and $400 a square foot to do the types of space that needs to go in there. And some of it, you know, we just don't know where the market is for it.
Rocco, can you chime in on this?
Sure. There has been an architectural study of this building done by Carmina Wood Morris, and they have a plan for the building. And it's very difficult to come up with any estimates, Matt, without a plan for the building, because you don't know what you're going to do with the building, so it's impossible to come up with an estimate on what it's going to cost. And I think the Carmina Wood, and Paul Lang is here from Carmina Wood Morris, I think the cost is a lot less than that if you look at their plan. And it's impossible to come up with estimates without a plan. So I don't know how close your estimates are without a plan.
Well, someone knew you were going to speak up on this because they want to know, Rocco, will you buy Tractor if it can't be used by the community?
I have an idea for the building. I don't have a plan. And I think first you get an idea, then it develops into a plan, and then it develops into the possible financing of the project. This is a community project. It's not a one-person project. And there's a lot more that has to be studied before you can make that kind of decision. And it's not something that's going to happen overnight either.
Let's follow up on the financing and some of the tax credit things. What would happen to tax credits if there is partial demolition?
You would lose the tax credits because these are contributing buildings, and you cannot get a tax credit once you destroy part of a contributing building. We ran into this with the A&A's. We wanted to do the A&A's department store, and we wanted to tear down the warehouse. If we did that, it was a contributing building, and we would lose the status of tax credits. I'm not an attorney, and I'm not Schiphol, but I think if you talk to Schiphol and you tell them that you're going to tear down part of the building, one of the contributing buildings, you'll lose your tax credit status.
Tanya?
I can address that. We actually did talk to Schiphol before Preservation Buffalo Niagara put together its stand of asking for this study. And that is exactly what the SHPO said to us, is that unless the plans for the building are approved through the tax credit process, which means the National Park Service, that there would probably be a loss of the historic significance of the building, and therefore they would no longer be eligible. And a very, very similar situation is playing out right now in another part of New York State, where an iconic building in a economically deprived community was being proposed for rehabilitation using the historic preservation tax credits. It was actually an almost unheard of that a building that was less than 50 years old was determined to be National Register eligible. The community was quite excited about the fact that this was going to happen. In the meantime, while all of this was happening, the developer started interior demolition of the building without making the SHPO or the Park Service aware. That building has now been declared ineligible for the National Register, and they've been informed that they cannot receive the tax credits. So this is something that Preservation Buffalo Niagara is deeply concerned about, and it's why we brought this idea of the study up and why any talk of demolition, of even partial demolition before there can be involvement from the Park Service is very important to us. One last little piece of irony to say about this, the demolition that did take place in that building that became ineligible, might very well have been allowed if they had gone through the process. But because they did it before there was any involvement by the federal government or the state, it immediately made the building no longer eligible. And that's what we don't want to have happen here.
Jerry, basically what would happen is they tear down whatever they're going to tear down, whatever building they plan to leave, you'd have a building there that would fall apart because there would be no money from SHPO to finance any tax credits for that building.
Okay. Matt, for you, can you clarify the ownership of the property, the chain of that ownership, and along with that, BNMC is the developer. What authority do you have as developer? Can you, first off, folks want to know the owner. Who owns
so the ownership is it's own? BBRC or BUDC. It's a subsidiary of the City of Buffalo, actually has title to the building. Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, through one of our subsidiaries, I think it's, you know this better than I do,
817. I know, but I didn't ask the question.
I think it's 817 Washington Street or something like that. Is the actual designated developer of the site. I think that is the pass-through. What's the other part of the question?
And what authority, I think what they're getting at is that whether you can demolish or not demolish, or how, what authority does BNMC have as developer of the property? What are you free to do or not do or whatever?
I think as anybody who owns a piece of property can do whatever they want to do as long as they follow the appropriate processes and procedures.
So, I mean, as a designated developer versus,
I don't think it's any different. Unless, I don't know, Rocco, you know this stuff better than I do. Is that, what's the difference?
Well, do you own it or don't you own it?
We don't. We're designated developer, so.
Well, they're asking if there's any difference.
It's no different. I don't see anything.
If you do anything different, it's designated
developer. I don't see anything, right? No.
So you got to do the same thing.
When is your status as designated developer expired?
I think like 3 years.
I think it's a year.
Yeah. We re-upped or something. We just re-upped recently. Oh, okay.
Okay, my understanding is that BUDC, Buffalo Urban Development Corporation, has title to the property. Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus is the designated developer, and as such, carte blanche. I think if that's kind of the answer to this.
Terry, does the developer's agreement say that they have carte blanche, or do they have to redevelop the building, or can they tear it down? What does the developer's agreement say?
Matt.
I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, I've got an answer, but I can't share it right now. That's not my role. I'll put on my hat.
What's the answer? No, tell us the answer.
Well, it's kind of a curious thing. The property was purchased by Buffalo Niagara Medical Center. The title was transferred to the Buffalo Brownfield Restoration Corporation, which is a subsidiary of the Buffalo Urban Development Corporation.
The mayor is chair.
And a member of the BNMC also. But sometime prior to the purchase, approximately 4 or 5 months prior to the purchase, Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus was given exclusive development rights to the property for a 3-year period, which could be renewed. At one point, they did renew those development rights. There was a, within a memorandum of understanding, there were certain operating and maintenance responsibilities, some of which rest with Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, some of which rest with Buffalo Urban Development Corporation. It's a conundrum on some levels, just as to who has responsibility for what, when, and how that will refer. But at present, Buffalo Urban Development Corporation, through their subsidiary, Buffalo Brownfield Restoration Corporation, holds title and has held title since 2007, and the exclusive developer's contract with the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus allows them to designate whoever subsequent redevelopers to mortgage, encumber, demolish, or whatever. That's the short story.
Can I ask you a question about the maintenance?
Well, the operation and maintenance portion of the contract, there was an agreement for some funds which are transferred on an annual basis to BUDC, but the responsibility for maintaining the property and the condition with which it was transferred, that's what I think slightly murky as to what Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus is paying for it out of their dime, and more or less operating and maintaining the structure to the present, as far as I understand. Who's got the full... the default agreement seems to be a little bit unclear.
Well, I mean, the concern is there doesn't appear to be anything.
Well, there is someone designated, but I don't really think that this is the forum for that at the present time. We can, there'll be more public discussion. There'll be more, as Matt said, he's disclosed every document in his possession, as far as we know, to us. It's quite a bit of material. People have gone over it. There are some things that are there, and there are some things that are not there. And getting to that, Matt, another question on the public process, which you say there has been no process up to this point, but there's been public funds spent there. How does that square?
What do you mean? So the public funds that we've used are the I think you're talking about the renovation. Oh, sorry. I think he's talking about the Innovation Center. So within the Innovation Center, I don't know if anybody knows this, just next to Ulrich's, there's a building. It's 128,000 square feet. We've renovated that building, and you know, it's got 35 small to maturing startup companies that are in there. And you know, we have them in there, and we're continuing to grow that concept of what we're doing. I think that answers what he's asking.
Okay, let me get back to this real quick. I think it's already been answered, but someone did ask the question. What specifically prevents reuse of Trico for BNMC? And if it is lab space, it's not possible, there are other uses to consider.
Yeah, I think I want to, you know, the one thing is anything in this world is possible to do. I think it really comes back to we've rehabbed this innovation center. And we did build out some lab space, and it was very difficult to do the type of lab space. It's a nice lab space, but it was at a lot larger cost than we wanted to, and it's very difficult to turn the space around into the needs of the labs and the type of space that we need here. So I think that's the question that is being asked of us, and that's what we've said throughout this when we asked for the market. The other part of it is you know, UB went through its process of UB 2020, and what happened with UB 2020 was throughout the process, program is really important to growing what we're trying to do. And the program ended up needing to be to the north end of the campus. So that's one thing that's talked about. You know, Rocco mentioned to me earlier, you know, we were talking about putting ECC there. Again, I have nothing to do with that. And I said, Rocco, you know, this isn't going to happen. And as you said, that isn't going to happen. So, you know, people have thrown that out there that that's a possibility, but it just doesn't work. You know, we'd like to have anything we can have down on the campus, but not everything is necessarily the market.
Matt, when you put the labs in the Innovation Center, did you use historic tax credits?
No.
Well, that's why it costs you more. If you put them into the Trico building, you can get an extra 40% in tax credits to pay for that space. And I don't think that the space can cost 40% more because you're putting it in Trico building. I think you need to re-examine.
Again, we will absolutely. I guess the thing that I'd say is, you know, and again, if you have the expertise in lab space, Rocco, we'd love to talk to you about it because we're willing to listen to anybody's ideas.
I think Tom wanted to chime in on that.
Part of the discussion and part of that question was related to the cost aspect of it. And Rocco pointed out that the historic preservation tax credits offer anywhere from 20 to 40% to toward that. I see some people in the audience here are from Niagara Falls, and there is a phenomenal example of a project there called Carolyn's House, where because of historic preservation tax credits, a $5.2 million rehab in a neighborhood where houses were selling for approximately anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000. This $5.2 million rehab received $979,000 worth of historic preservation benefits. The YWCA of Niagara, who did this, has gone across the state saying, without those tax credits, that project would not have happened. So it's very important that there be at least a consideration for the use of the tax credits. As Rocco points out, it can provide the money that makes the difference between something happening and something not. And the other piece from a historic preservation standpoint is it allows that little bit extra to go toward historic preservation interests, because it's anywhere from 20 to 40%.
Matt, if a reading study is performed, will BNMC use the study?
I think that's kind of a loaded question from the standpoint of, it's not just BNMC. Again, to be clear,
right,
we're open to listening to any ideas and concepts there. But I think if you ask the developers, I mean, you really, from a reuse study and all that type of stuff, you don't really do that. You go out, you talk to the market, you find your market, you create the market. So the study is a nice idea and a concept, but the practical reality, to answer your question of use it, sure, you'll look at it. I mean, I think you'd be foolish not to look at it. But to be practical about implementing, I think there's different ways of doing development. And I defer to these two gentlemen who know more about it than I do.
Would the medical campus commit to any space in that building if it was going to be redeveloped, if it could be adapted to their use?
Rocco, you asked me this question about commit. We can't commit to anything. I mean, the where we're putting our funds right now are into the type of stuff up to the north end of the campus. You know, at some point in time, you know, there might be a project there, but you keep saying commit.
What's your plan for the use of the vacant space then? If you tear the building down and you have no plans for it, why are we tearing it down?
Rocco, at the appropriate time, we'll move forward on it. You know, we've been working through with our group about what the project would be there, and we're hoping that the developers, like yourself, will put money on the table and do a development there. But I think that's the most important thing that our community needs to see, and we've said this from the beginning, I've said it in all the meetings. If the appropriate developer who has the wherewithal puts money on the table, we're more than happy to have that conversation.
Martin Wasaba. Young lady Dana said that the daylight factories were precursor to the Bauhaus movement in Germany and modernism as a architectural form in the 20th century. Did you know that?
I did. I felt I should.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
That's
next
it.
Question. Matt. If the Buffalo Medical Campus holds development rights to the building, why was ownership conveyed to Buffalo Brownfield Restoration Corporation? And then there's a comment here that says, it appears nothing has been done to maintain the building. It appears like a classic demolition by neglect. This building should be in housing court, etc. But if the Buffalo Medical Campus holds the development rights to the building, why was ownership conveyed to Buffalo Brownfield?
Yeah, so when we did it from the beginning, when it all was purchased, it had to be purchased, there was one giant purchase. And our interest was in the four-story building, which we've already taken, and I think people need to understand that. We've rehabilitated 128,000 square feet of Trico space right now. Brought it back. It wasn't a tear down and build a new building. It was a renovation of 128,000 square feet. That was our interest in the land across the street. This was kind of a throw-in. You know, I think the Sabres made a trade in Calgary and got Robin Regier, and they got Alex Kotelik and shipped them off to Europe. I don't know if we can ship the building off to Europe, but I mean, you know, it's one of those things.
Why not take the building to market via RFP or sale? And B, BNMC paid $4.3 million for the property. Are you still willing to give it away to a buck for whoever comes up?
Yeah, I think what I've said from the beginning, we're going to continue to do this. I think that's where our group was headed towards, is going out as a collective group. And I think from a community perspective, having sides on something like this isn't what we were looking for as a group. And we were trying to come together with everybody and say, look, let's set a new example for how these processes should play out and move forward as a community. We're looking back way too much. Let's look forward and come together with a potential reuse and go through an RFP process like that for what we believe is the market. And again, we're all not going to be happy and get exactly what everybody wants in that, ourselves included. And I think Doug said something that's really important. This process actually opened up our eyes to some ideas that we were completely missing. One of them is Goodell Street. You know, one of the images that hopefully we'll be able to show to everybody at some point in time, it had retail along Goodell Street, and I looked at the picture at first and I said, this is crazy, I don't get why this is here. And then the more and more we talked about it, you gotta remember, we're gonna have 17,000 employees on the campus. When we have 17,000 employees on the campus, our goal is to hope to have more people live downtown, live in Allentown, live in the Fruit Belt neighborhood, because they're our partners throughout all this. And what we need to do along Goodell Street is actually slow it down. And so putting the retail and the businesses along Goodell Street, and actually in the renderings that the group came up with, our goal would be to close one of the lanes on Goodell Street so it's not a raceway. So, you know, there was a lot of positives that came out of this process. Was it perfect? No. But I think we're really headed in a good path if we continue the dialogue. So, I think that answered.
Matt, I've got a question. You've taken the parking away from the building. Now you have a 600,000 square foot building with no parking. You rendered the building almost valueless because you take the parking away from it. How do you redevelop a building like that without any parking when you've taken the most valuable piece away from the project?
I don't know, Rocco. I mean, that's where you're the creative one. I mean, what our thing that we came up with when we bought the building, we knew exactly what we were working on. So, you know, you can make a statement like that, but our intention was never to develop it from our perspective. We were out there meeting with most every local developer saying, are you interested in this building? And none of them have showed interest in the building.
Because there is no parking.
One last question, and then we'd like a quick comment from each of you. Regarding the leaked schedule, was it...
The leaked schedule. I like this.
Was it purely a speculative scenario, or is there a plan for partial and or complete demolition?
No, I mean, again, what I said earlier, it had dates on it, because it was asked of us to really give the group a time frame for what it would look like. Again, we have to go through a public process to follow all the rules and regulations that Tom mentioned. So those dates that are on there obviously don't match to that. It was to show how much general time would we have as a community to work on saving a portion of the building that could be redeveloped. And what's that time frame look like? And that was the only reason that it had dates on it. I mean, I think if you had to do it all over, I mean, that was supposed to be a document that we all shared collectively to start getting a concept. When it was put out there, it was put out there with false information explaining and in a false way what it actually was.
Did that answer your question?
It does, and we're gonna start with Paul.
I mean, I have two comments. One is, I think it's extremely important that this building become globally landmark for the points I made before. That this building, the decisions made on this building should be held at the local level. And that's what the Buffalo Preservation Board does. We're, like I said, we are a CLG, certified local government from Albany, and handle issues like this at the local level. But the next question I have is, why would Buffalo Medical Campus buy a building they knew, which was on the National Register of Historic Places, with intentions of tearing it down?
Rocco's comment.
I think the building can be saved. I think you have to be a little creative. It's not going to happen overnight, Matt. It may not meet your time schedule. It'll probably take 2 years just to get all the pieces put together. But I do think the building can be saved. I have some ideas on what can be done with the building. But it's going to be a community effort, and it's going to take a while. It's not going to happen overnight again.
Tom Yates.
I would like to repeat that Preservation Buffalo Niagara is very much interested in continuing the dialogue in this process. It would be helpful to have it understood, though, that we are Preservation Buffalo Niagara. So the role that we would play would be one, would be to help people to understand what historic preservation could do for this. We know that there are developers outside of the community who have expressed an interest in this project because emails have been forwarded to us saying that they have expressed an interest. We are offering to find grants to do a historic preservation adaptive reuse study so that those people from outside the community would have an understanding of what this building is and what feasibility there would be in rehabbing it. We absolutely would like to continue to be part of the process, but we would continue as a historic preservation organization.
Martin, you've been hogging the conversation, but we ask you to keep it brief.
Okay. I think this building is extremely worthy of preservation for its architecture, for its place in the industrial history of Buffalo, and for the importance of John O'Shea and the continuing role he still plays long after his death in the future of our, in the present and future of our community. And I think we would be making a huge mistake if we did not look at every possible option for the reuse of this facility before any concrete action is taken.
Matthew.
Paul, can you just say your last comment again? Because this one day,
why did you buy a building that's on the National Register of Historic Places and you're intending to tear it down?
So just to answer that question, again, we didn't. When you had to buy the property, we wanted to do the Innovation Center.
It's 128,000 square feet.
To continue to grow jobs in the community. That's what our focus is on, is the economic development and the job creation of building wealth for our community. So when we bought it to buy that building and the land across the street. And that's why, again, we had an agreement, and BBRC was very good to take this because that's the type of projects that they take on. We don't do that type of stuff. That's not what we do. And so that was their aspect. And we've been open to anybody who wants to take a look at this thing. And when it was brought to the Preservation Board, I think 2 years ago, that's when I think the dialogue started. And I wish we had continued it at that point. I'm hoping we can continue it now.
I have to respond to that. They bought a parcel of land for a parking lot, 128,000 square feet, willing to sacrifice almost 600,000 square feet of the historic building.
And just to say, that's a statement, but again, that's not, he's making a statement of his opinion. That's not what we did. We put it in the hands of an entity to take care of it, and others knew it was there. And at any moment in time, and I've said this throughout the entire process, a responsible developer that puts money on the table to do this development, because it has to be in the hands of someone with money to do a development like this, we'd love to see that. There's no downside for us to see someone who's going to do a responsible development take place there. Positive development in the community on the campus is really, really important. But you have to be very practical about what is the opportunity there. And hopefully we can regroup the Preservation Roundtable and start and continue the discussion.
Doug.
That's really my hope, too, that I hope that we can get back to the table and enlarge the table, get more people around there, keep the process going, and have him, be able to have sort of a civilized and community dialogue where everybody at the table respects everybody else's opinion and knows that there are a lot of different ways to look at this. And if we can use this as not only a model to build this process, it's better for the next project that's inevitably coming along, and the one after that, so we don't have to kind of keep going through this, the painful process of having to to do battle over these issues when they come up. Then that's one win way of looking at it, a win. Another way is, you know, I was talking to Rocco earlier about, you know, how we can maybe leverage the importance of this building, and as maybe sort of a political tool to help lift the $5 million cap on the New York State tax credit allowance. Right now, I mean, if you throw around 40%, and it really isn't 40%, because in the New York State piece of it, it only goes up to $5 million. And on a project of this scale, that's, you know, barely a drop in the bucket. And, you know, so the effective rate that of the tax benefit is really much less than 40. But if we can get the state to eliminate that cap the way the federal government does, it's going to open the doors for the potential for a whole slew of projects that are now unable to be financed, because you'd see people lining up for some of these projects rather than struggling to find a way to make them work under the current tax system. So maybe we can broaden the impact of this by sort of leveraging some political influence to help make that piece happen.
On behalf of Preservation Buffalo Niagara as Executive Director, I would like to thank the presenters who came here and the people who joined us in answering these questions. But most of all, I would like to thank the people, all of you who came here, because this really is the important part of the process. I think it's very appropriate that this took place in a room that was designed after the Greek theater concept, because that was where democracy all was about. And here we're doing a very democratic thing by having the public involved. And I can assure you that it would be Preservation Buffalo Niagara's goal to continue having the public involved in discussions about historic buildings. Thank you so much for coming tonight.